Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Tax Crime Junkies. We're here today talking about a case that will have your skin crawling and make you double-check the locks on your doors. It's got all the ingredients for an awful horror movie. A missing tax attorney with no signs of struggle or forced entry into his house until police find his body wrapped up in a rug and dumped in a storm cellar covered in acid. What happened and who did it? Well, you'll soon find out. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Tax Crime Junkies. I'm your host, Dominique. I'm a CPA, certified tax strategist. I have an interest in true crimes, and I have a degree in law and lead the American Institute of Certified Tax Planners. And with me today is my oh-so-lovable co-host, Tom Gorzinski.
Hey, Dominique. I'm Tom Gorzinski. I'm an enrolled agent. I've admitted to practice before the United States Tax Court, and I'm a tax instructor. Like you, I have a real interest in true crime, so we decided to create a true crime podcast to combine our love of mysteries, whodunits, and tax. This is Tax Crime Junkies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Today's episode is going to be a wild one. We're diving deep into the dark and twisted world of tax law, where numbers are king and secrets are currency. But wait, it gets even juicier. Because this story involves a murder most foul, and our victim is none other than Ashley Paulo, a top-notch tax attorney from St. Lucie, Florida. What could possibly connect taxes and murders, you ask? Well, my friend, the investigation into Ashley's death revealed a complex web of greed, deceit, and betrayal. This is one of those stories that's going to leave you on the edge of your seat. So buckle up, because this is the case of Ashley Paulo.
So first things first, let's begin with what we know about the victim. Ashley Paulo was a man who had dedicated his life to tax law, just like you and I, Dominique. He studied law at the University of Memphis, eventually became a tax attorney, and was admired by many in the field. He had been admitted to the Florida Bar in 1980 and had been practicing for over three decades. But what was he like as a person? Well, Ashley was a bit of a recluse who preferred to work from home. His office was his house, located in St. Lucie County, Florida. There, surrounded by stacks of paper and clutter, he spent most of his days poring over the tax code and other legal documents.
Well, I can definitely relate about the recluse work style, Tom.
I definitely can too. But what's really interesting in this case was Ashley's work from home arrangements. When I say his office was his house, I mean his house was converted and used as an office. And it was like a mansion. Picture this. He had iron gates opening into a wide horseshoe driveway and stately columns surrounding the front of his home office. He had employees there with desks and file cabinets in all the rooms, save just for his master bedroom, which he kept under lock and key.
Yeah, that might be a little uncomfortable for me, Tom. When I first started in practice, and I hired my first employee, I had her come work at my home because that was my office. But I never really felt comfortable leaving her alone in my house. And pretty shortly after she started, I let her go. But from what you've discovered so far, it's clear that Ashley Paulo had a lot of talent and skill in his field as a tax attorney. And he sounds just like a typical tax pro. He built a successful career. He gained the trust of some of the wealthiest people in Florida. And it's not surprising that his clients relied on him heavily, because we all know how complex tax law is. So he was known for taking his job seriously, being very thorough and detail-oriented. Does that sound like anyone we know? Now, Ashley's specialty was that he focused on tax problem resolution. And so this specialty and reputation, I think, really contributed to his success because he was able to find ways to help people out of trouble, you know, things that other tax pros might have missed. And it was a great way for him to market his business. In fact, he had kind of a sophisticated marketing program going on to bring in troubled taxpayers. He was also a father. He was also an ex-husband, although there doesn't really seem to be any bad blood with his ex-wife. In fact, Ashley was described by his daughter as a great dad, maybe a bit of a workaholic, and by others, he was described as outgoing. He had a laid-back disposition and a really good sense of humor, according to his mom, named Pearl Paulo. I think all our moms would say we have a good sense of humor, right?
I know my mom would. So, Dominique, what would anyone possibly want with him? The whole story is absolutely insane. But let's keep in mind that the descriptions of Ashley Paulo as a kind and laid-back person seem to only apply to his family and a handful of neighbors. Former employees have painted a different picture, describing him as someone who could be difficult to work with. Now, again, you and I may have heard similar things too, right?
Right.
It's even been suggested he may have had a history of violence and erratic behavior, which was known by his family and partners. Reportedly, Ashley met his wife in a clinic where they were both being treated for behavioral disorders, and their marriage was plagued by allegations of abuse. Jean Paulo, his ex-wife, claimed that he beat her regularly, sometimes multiple times a month. In 1995, she actually filed a restraining order against him to protect herself and their children from his potentially dangerous temper. All in all, when it comes to Ashley's success in the work field, it was not without its controversies. He had a reputation for being aggressive in his pursuit of tax breaks and sometimes pushing the boundaries of the law. Some actually accused him of unethical practices. According to the sheriff leading the investigation, many people expressed frustration with the advice and taxes completed by Mr. Paulo. Quote from the sheriff, "I guess he gave the wrong advice to a lot of people in their affairs." Now, as more information surfaces, Ashley's story becomes even more unbelievable. It turns out that he had been once charged with what he...
Murder.
You guessed it.
It was murder, but the charge was described as third-degree murder, which makes it a little complicated. But Ashley's story is pretty intriguing, especially given what happens to him in the end. So I want to get right into it. Did I cut you off too much, Tom, there? I just want to get straight to the murder.
No, I want to hear about this.
Well, back in the year 2000, Ashley was at 2J's Gourmet Deli, and he accidentally bumped into Julius Melnick, a 75-year-old man who was also a customer in the deli. And as a result, Mr. Melnick fell and dislocated his hip in the store. And just 3 months later, he passed away. Now, he passed away from pneumonia, but also complications with that broken hip. So the police actually charged Ashley with murder, which really seems, again, crazy considering what happens in the end. But it's crazy on its own because you can insist all you want that you did nothing wrong and that maybe the police need to look somewhere else or that it's an accident. But he got charged with third-degree murder. He was lucky, though, because there was an eyewitness who happened to be a teen worker at the deli, and that witness told the police that he didn't think the push was intentional. So eventually they dropped the charges because of a lack of evidence. But I have to say, this situation really raises some interesting questions. Was he really involved in a murder, but kind of just got lucky with the outcome. I think when I read the testimony of the teen worker, you know, he said he didn't push him intentionally. I mean, if you're going to push someone, you're pushing someone, you know, and poor 75-year-old man. But he could be actually innocent, and maybe he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. It's hard to say after the fact for sure, but one thing is clear. Ashley was no stranger to trouble with the law.
He definitely wasn't a stranger. He was arrested in January 2010 on charges of organized dealing in stolen property and second-degree grand theft. The allegations against him were that he traded someone else's Bobcat construction equipment to pay off a debt. It's unclear whether this incident had any connection to his death. Despite all these troubles, it seemed like Ashley could move on with his life. Fate had different plans, however. Nearly a year later, he was dead, and it appears his past caught up with him. Now, the circumstances surrounding his murder are incredibly disturbing. When the police received a call from a former employee, they went to his house to do a welfare check. Now, his family had not seen or heard from him for about 10 days, about Thanksgiving, and packages were piling up on his doorstep. Nothing was missing from the house. His vehicle was on the property, but Ashley was nowhere to be found. The St. Lucie County Sheriff's Office offered a $50,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the person or persons responsible for his death. David Paulo, his father, put up the reward money. He last talked to his son a day or two before Thanksgiving. He said Ashley sounded fine and even cracked a joke or two.
I think any father would be. He was really worried. His parents were worried about him. In fact, here's Ashley's sister talking about the situation.
He did a lot of taxes for people, so he hired people to come in and work for him in his home. Thanksgiving weekend was the last time that I spoke to him. The only thing I thought of was maybe he had a heart attack. Because he was a smoker. Thought maybe he was walking around his property and he had a heart attack and he was somewhere on that property, they just couldn't find him. I thought that he was probably not alive. Don't ask me why. And they said, oh no, he probably just left and went somewhere. Went out of town and all that. But his car was there, his keys were there. I know that when somebody goes missing, it's not great.
You know, it's interesting too, Tom, because the person that actually called in the welfare check, you mentioned it's a former employee, but there's something interesting about the former employee. Take a listen.
And your name is?
Jane Huffman.
Jane Huffman. Jane, how do you know Ashley Paulo?
I used to work for Ashley.
How long ago?
It was about 6-7 months ago.
Why did you call 911 if you haven't worked for him for 7 months?
Well, I had kept in touch with him. Nothing recent, but once I left, I was still friends with some of the other people that worked there. I tried to call Ashley.
Okay.
And it was going straight to his voicemail.
She not only called, but she was super persistent. So after Paulo's body was discovered in the storm cellar, the police requested anyone who had seen him or knew who he could have been with on Thanksgiving, and of course the days following that, they wanted them to come forward with information. Now, unfortunately, Ashley Paulo's body was wrapped in a rug with a plastic bag around his head, and the medical examiner ruled his death as asphyxia. So he suffocated to death. The police investigation into his death started to pick up speed, you know, once they located his body, but they really had trouble narrowing down the identity of murderer. It seemed like there was no shortage of suspects given Paulo's recent legal troubles and his contentious relationships with some of his employees and clients. So the possibility that someone he knew might be responsible just couldn't be ruled out at the time. The police are kind of looking at each other going, where do we start? Was it one of Paulo's ex-clients? You know, maybe they were angry that they got bad advice from him.
The employee who made the call to report him missing was actually not a suspect, as she had a solid alibi. Nevertheless, as it turns out, the incident where Ashley was killed wasn't actually his first brush with death. Just 6 months earlier, a young man named John Wilson was arrested for actually trying to kill Ashley. Nichols was taken into custody after eyewitnesses claimed he drove a white Mitsubishi right through the gates of Ashley's home and began assaulting him. The two men moved outside. Wilson attempted to choke Ashley. No one was shot, but the altercation only ended when someone knocked Wilson in the head and caused him to black out. When asked about his motive, Wilson vaguely mentioned, quote, the way Ashley treated his girlfriend.
Things weren't under the best terms in my own personal life.
Okay.
And I completely lost it.
Wilson's girlfriend worked for Paulo, and Wilson was convinced the two were having an affair. After a heated argument with his mother, Wilson then went over to Paulo's home to attack him. Here's John Wilson trying to explain why he attacked Ashley.
For the past year, I've known my girlfriend. She has worked for Ashley Paulo, P-O-L-L-O-W. I completely lost my goddamn mind. There's no getting around it. I couldn't handle it anymore. If I had the chance to take his life, I would have taken it.
Now, interestingly, Wilson himself admitted he intended to kill Ashley if he hadn't been knocked on the side of his head. However, it's unclear whether Ashley was really the villain he had been made out to be. His sister mentioned that Wilson had come into contact with some insect poison shortly before the attempted murder and had been really acting strangely.
Isn't that the guy Wilson who had just stabbed his own mother several times before driving to Ashley's house? Unfortunately, his mother passed away in the hospital, but he killed her moments before going over to Ashley's house, so he was agitated. To me, this sounds like the prime suspect because he shows up, he's punching him, he's trying to kill him with his hands, and it sounds to me like he was asphyxiated. But he was arrested for both crimes, attacking Ashley and murdering his mother. And so that kind of gives him an alibi in a weird way, Tom, because he couldn't be possibly be connected to Ashley's murder because he was already in jail at the time.
I mean, he was clearly violent. He stabbed his own mother in her neck. So let this be a warning. Don't cross your employees. You never know who they're dating. They might snap and do something like this.
These people are some crazy ass people. Who kills people and even thinks they can get away with it? You have to be in a different frame of mind. I can't even wrap my head around people like that.
You know, I really like her. I like Ashley's sister. This is a lot of murder stacking up. First, the guy from the deli, then the mother killer who attacked him after sniffing pesticide. And ultimately, he ends up in the bottom of a storm shelter on his own property. But even though there were many potential suspects, the police investigated two individuals whose names kept coming up during the course of their investigation. And those two are Thomas Barnard and Michelle Lockridge. And what do they have in common?
Thomas Barnard and Michelle Lockridge both worked for Ashley for several years. Thomas handled tax resolution clients and prepared back tax returns. Side note, those are the same things I've done for law firms in the past. Interesting. And Michelle worked as his bookkeeper. As suspects in Ashley's murder, the police reached out to interview them early on in the investigation. Now, the two lived together in Thomas's mother's house along with Michelle's four children. During their interviews with the police, Thomas and Michelle provided conflicting stories. According to Thomas, they last saw Ashley on the Saturday after Thanksgiving, and he was too drunk to drive himself home. Thomas claimed they spent time together on Thursday for Thanksgiving and Black Friday. Thomas dropped him off and took his car home with him. He said he returned to Ashley's work home on Sunday, dropped the car off, but didn't see Ashley.
And didn't they say that they both went to work Monday, but he was not there, so they worked all day and locked up the house?
Yes, that's what they said. The next day, Tuesday, they waited several hours as the door was locked and no one was responding to the doorbell. And eventually they gave up and went home.
Well, yeah, the door was locked because they locked it.
Right.
So they're saying the day before they worked alone and figured he was in tax court or something. But Michelle has a different story than Thomas. She agreed, just like Thomas, that they went out to dinner on Saturday. They dropped him off because he couldn't drive himself. But she said that when they showed up at work on Monday, he was there but locked himself in his room.
Okay, that's odd. Did they say why he would have locked himself in?
Not that I saw in the reports, but it does seem suspicious that they have different stories about when they last saw him and what happens afterwards. And Michelle is very defensive about it. Listen to her explain it.
Monday I went in.
You worked Monday?
Yeah, but only for a few hours because he wouldn't come out of the door. He has his bedroom door locked. He wouldn't come out of the door. Tom was there.
I mean, you guys are just told me you have to figure out what's important. I didn't hurt him.
What is it that you want me to
do? We want you to tell the truth, not be vague.
I'm not being vague.
I have to say, the fact that they both worked for him adds another layer of suspicion. But giving their conflicting stories and their close relationship with Ashley, it wouldn't be surprising if they were looked at closely by police. I mean, they're the last ones to see him alive. And it can be a dead giveaway if your stories don't match. So take notes, criminals. Get your stories straight.
It doesn't help either that they already both had criminal records. But Michelle's is worse. So, Dom, get this. Michelle had a history of embezzlement. And that is always concerning since she was on probation for stealing from prior employers at the time when she was hiring for positions dealing with financial information, access to the business, or business clients' finances. In fact, as licensed EAs and CPAs, we can lose our license if we are convicted of financial crimes. We cannot practice. Now, Michelle, don't know if she had any licenses, but I'm assuming a generic bookkeeper can continue to work in that case. I find it a little surprising that actually allowed her to work and handle sensitive information given her past. However, it was later revealed that Michelle was in a romantic relationship with Thomas, who also was working closely with Ashley. So perhaps Thomas convinced Ashley to hire Michelle, give her a chance, and Ashley didn't bother to do a background check.
Wait, what? So Michelle had her own little soap opera going on?
It seems like it, but that's not really, we haven't gotten to the craziest part. Michelle had four kids, including a 10-year-old daughter. And after she got arrested for Ashley's murder, the kids went to live with their dad. And the custody of her kids becomes a big motivator in this story.
Yeah, it does. And we're getting there. But the situation took a tragic turn when Michelle's 10-year-old daughter was murdered. She was found dead, her body dumped in the woods around their home. She was wrapped in a white dress. And the prime suspect in the case was Michelle's own 15-year-old son, the girl's brother. Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
So brother kills sister, and we already have this weird, disturbing story. But this is just wild to me that the suspect's children, you know, one of them killed the other. The details of this case is really heartbreaking.
So this happened after Ashley was killed, right?
Yes, after. So let's add another murder to the list. gosh, murder just seems to follow this tax attorney. What kind of karma is he putting out there?
I nothing I want to experience, Dominique. I'm staying away.
Me neither. So the arrest affidavit that was released by authorities revealed that Michelle's 15-year-old son actually admitted to shooting his sister with a .22 caliber rifle. He did it in March of 2016. So where we're talking about Ashley's death, that took place in 2010. So it's not really that long afterwards. He did it at 3 in the morning, but he provided three conflicting versions of the story about what actually led up to the shooting. Does that sound like maybe his mother? In the first version, he claimed that he had mistaken his sister for a deer, so he fired the gun. Number two, he said he thought someone was attacking his sister and fired the gun to protect her, but accidentally hit her instead. And the last story, he claimed that he shot her accidentally while teaching her how to use a firearm, I guess at 3 in the morning. After the shooting, the brother cleaned his sister's body, dressed her in a white frock, and dumped her body in a field behind their house. He also hid the rifle that he used in the killing, but he later ended up confessing and he brought police to its location. He ended up taking a plea deal. Remember, he's 15 at the time. He pled no contest to first-degree murder, and he got a sentence of 50 years with a 10-year probation.
Okay. So both of them are playing games with lies here until Michelle makes the mistake of trying to cash a $1,250 check at a bank from Ashley Paulo's account. But the bank wouldn't cash it because the signature wasn't consistent with his signature card. Of course, it bounces, but the authorities are alerted and Michelle ends up behind bars. Michelle's story is certainly something else. She claims that she had a sexual relationship with Ashley, who apparently paid not just her, but also a couple of her girlfriends for sex. Michelle alleges that Ashley enjoyed rough sex, and he wanted her to choke him during an encounter, which resulted in his accidental death. Afraid and unsure of what to do, Michelle called Thomas for help in hiding the body. According to her account, Thomas purchased acid, a type of drain cleaner, and helped her pour it over Ashley's body before disposing of it in the storm cellar. Police reports have confirmed that Thomas was seen purchasing the drain cleaner, a lock, and a chain on the evening of the murder. However, Michelle gave another account in a later interview and claimed that Thomas admitted to killing Ashley. She said she found Ashley's body wrapped in a blanket with a plastic bag covering his face in a bedroom closet after Thomas told her something bad had happened to him. Michelle tried to lift Ashley's body, but it was too heavy. She called Thomas and suggested calling for help, but he told her not to and warned her that she would be blamed for Ashley's death due to her criminal record.
You think?
What? Right?
So, according to this account, this is the only thing that Thomas had to do with the crime? He just helped her hide the body?
Exactly. There was also another account, though.
Right. Despite all the drama and the controversy surrounding Ashley's life and his work and his death, there was another witness that came forward with a completely different story. Christopher Higgins' testimony adds another layer of complexity to an already convoluted case. And guess who Christopher Higgins is, Tom?
And who's that?
Another tax employee.
Of course. And to our listeners, it might not be clear yet how this new information will change the course of the story, if at all. There are so many loose ends, unanswered questions. It's hard to say whether there will be a new suspect or maybe Michelle and Thomas were truly innocent. After all, being accused of murder is not something that goes away easily. But as we saw with our victim, Ashley Paulo, he had his charges dismissed, so you never know. It's possible that Ashley's murder was related to his work alone, or that he had enemies in the business world. With so many possibilities to consider, it's going to take more time to unravel the true motives behind this tragic event. Police obviously want more, and they do have an ace up their sleeves. Remember how Michelle was on probation for past embezzlement? At least they're able to arrest her as they continue to investigate.
Right, because she tried to pass the phony check that she forged. So if Michelle ends up guilty of violating her probation, which sounds like she is, she's headed for 10 years in the slammer automatically. But to find out what happens, we're going to reveal that next episode. And if you're still keeping count, we are up to 4 murders so far in this case. Tom, we're going to add to the list.
Well, all I can say is I cannot wait for the next episode. That's all we have time for today, though. Thank you for joining us on today's riveting episode of Tax Crime Junkies. As we delve into the intricate world of white-collar crime and tax fraud, we're not only exposing the perpetrators, but also the flaws in the system. By shedding light on the trial and the investigation, we aim to close these loopholes for good. Join us next week as we continue our crusade to unveil the hidden secrets of the tax world and ultimately find the truth. Don't forget to visit our website at taxcrimejunkies.com to share your thoughts on this case. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a positive rating on Apple or Google Play. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you soon for another episode of Tax Crime Junkies.
That's right. We hope you'll join us again next week as we continue our mission to find the loopholes that went left and close them for good. Until next time, remember, every crime has a trail that leads to the truth.